Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 213th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly, half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. My guest today is Golale Yazdani. She was born and raised in Iran. Between the ages of 8 and 23, she lived in Tehran. She came to Maine to study at Maine College of Art and earned her MFA in May of 2018. She uses her art to advocate for basic rights for women and specializes in metal and jewelry, as well as performance. So glad to have you here on New Mainers Speak, Golale.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Such a pleasure. You are the eldest of two children in your family. Yeah. I wondered if you could tell us what an everyday situation might look like in your family growing up as a child. What would an average Sunday include?
I think there are some common life element that most people, aside from a culture or a country that they're coming from, they experience. For example, going to school, or if they have a sibling, getting into the fight with them or not.
Did you fight with your brother?
Actually, no, because we're pretty close. So we, most of the time, we just talked or watched movie, hung out. So no, I mean, maybe from time to time, but not all the time. It was not crazy. So I had a pretty normal life. And I think if I want to talk about some major differences growing up, that would be the educational system that I went through. Because, well, based on my personal experience, being here, coming here, seeing schools, and also being back home, growing up, there is a very intense competitive situation in schools that made us to study all the time. And that's because of an exam that we have at the end of year of high school that's called University Entrance Exam, which is one of the most intense and competitive. And the reason is that if you want to go into the very good university, which is a handful of them across the country, you have to get a very good score. So if I just want to give a very basic example, these numbers I'm going to go talk about, they're not a fact. It's just an example. For example, if 50,000 students, they want to go to college, you should at least be the first 1,000 in order to pick a good major and go to a good university. So that's make it very competitive and very intense.
Do you feel that competition right from the start?
That's actually... one of the points, because throughout the middle school and high school, students study just to get ready for that final stage and the final year of high school in order to do a good job on their entrance exam. For example, and this is also based on my personal experience, my friends, my peers, and people I knew, people the last year of that high school, they study usually between 6 hours all the way even up to 15, 16 hours a day that entire year. And I saw so many cases, students, they become physically ill because the amount of anxiety that they go through. So
that's really intense.
It's very intense. And basically my middle school all the way up to high school, all of my teenage years were involved with studying and taking classes. And after school classes, like if you want to learn swimming or music or English language, they're not a part of school. I mean, school might teach you some basic English, but that's about it.
And that's how your English got so good.
Yeah, I had to take those classes after school in order to hone some skills. So as far as I remember, all those years were filled with classes, school, studying, and maybe our weekend was just catching up on life and getting ready and getting my energy back to go through another full week.
So it sounds like your parents were supportive of this studying culture.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And that's a that's a commitment too, right? Mm-hmm. They probably made sure you weren't doing too many chores so you'd have time to do your studies so you could get into a good school.
Yes, I think that's a very common, toward parents, specifically in my country, that they want their kids to go to good school. They want their kids to have a good education. So it's very important that the children go to a very good and disciplined schools. I went to a very disciplined high school, and I just remember studying in that school. Any score, we have a numerical score, and the highest is 20. So any score under 18 or 18.5, it would considered as bad, which is, if I want to transfer to the alphabetical score here, would be, I don't know, maybe B plus, B. So that was very intense. And that's the case with a lot of students. Yes, you have to go through that if basically, I don't know.
Well, it's a big race to get to the best education.
Yes.
So that you can.
Yes.
What? I mean, what happens if you don't get the best education, if you don't get the best scores?
Of course, everything is a matter of a choice, but I know that with a lot of people I know, with a lot of friends, peers, and my own family, the problem was that, what else do you want to do in the society if you don't go to school? You want to go to school just in order to be able to be independent down the road and can support yourself and have a social status for yourself. So I think that was the major case, and it is a major case for a lot of people.
Could Iran use more universities?
This is not a specific major, like a field for me, so I should be very careful about like talking about
sure.
this.
We're just going on.
But yes, there are schools. It's not that they're not universities, but there are a handful of very well-known universities that, for example, if you want to apply abroad and if you want to study abroad, for example, America, like this American system and American universities for grad school, they just know those few well-known universities and will make it easier for you to get accepted abroad. So that is, for example, that is just one reason. And there are so many other reasons. For example, the environment that you want to study, the teachers that you're going to have, the facilities that you're going to have, it's going to be a little bit different.
I think I understand what you're talking about, but there's a real race for those top seats.
Exactly.
What's it like being a girl growing up in Iran? Were you encouraged to study, or were there things you were encouraged to not do?
I think if I want to talk about some of the challenges, because I can attack it in two different ways. One of them is always the difficulties and ups and downs that you have on your way to reaching your goal. And the other challenges would be maybe the outside or external forces that might disrupt your way. And if I want to talk about it in that way, is that basically, as you said, like, what is it like to be a girl? I'm sure you or some of the listeners might have heard some bad and horror stories about stuff that might happen in Middle East, specifically Iran. We're talking about rules like women cannot study, or they cannot work, or they cannot travel if they don't have the permission of their father or their husband, and so many other rules. Fortunately, I was privileged enough that I was in a family that they supported me no matter what through all this education and learning. But there was one challenge, and that was changing my major from mathematics to art. When I was in high school, I was in mathematics major, and when I wanted to change to art, I remember my parents, they didn't want me to. And of course, they had their own reasons, because art is not supported that much within that community. Like, the resources, the financial support is very, very few. So they were worried that if I can support myself and if I can be independent. So they kind of refused at first. And after this long battle that we had, my dad put one condition, that if I get my diploma in high school in mathematics, and with the score, the minimum score that I could get, or the GPA basically, was again, based on numerical, would be 19 out of 20, which will be, I don't know, still A plus or A. In that case, I'm allowed to change my major the last year of high school and go to art and get ready for the university entrance exam to go to an art school. And that's what I had to do. I pushed. It was not easy.
You had to know your own heart at a young age to push for
exactly
studying art over mathematics.
Yes, it was. it was difficult, especially that as I mentioned, I was in a very difficult school, but I made it. I made it alive, and I changed my major.
Yes, you did, and you received a BFA from University of Art in Tehran.
Exactly,
and then you came here for an MFA in the U.S.
Yes,
at Mecca,
exactly,
Maine College of Art.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could compare those two experiences. What did you see here mm-hmm. that you had not experienced back in Iran? And mm-hmm. what was that like for you?
Mm-hmm. So there are quite differences when I look about my personal experiences. Of course, it's different for each person. Like, I'm sure different students in different art majors back home, they had different experience. But this is personal and specific to me. I remember that, as I mentioned, so the budget and specifically facility in school was very few. I remember we had this course that we had to make a mold with plaster, and a bag of plaster maybe at a time was like under $2. and our class was 23 people, and the project was supposed to be one project per person. That's how you usually learn to do it on your own. Since the school refused to buy us a bag of plasters, that project turned into two people per project. And this is just a very simple, basic example of how much they refused to put enough budget for students to learn
just and hone
their skills.
Just didn't have the resources.
Exactly. And then I came here to Maine College of Art, and for the first time I had a private studio, right? I had a personal space to put my tools to work, to have a studio visits, which I did not have, right? Or a concept of critique. Like, for the first time, me and my peers here at Maine College of Art and faculties, they are talking about an art for like an hour, right? And this was how serious they took this subject, and they were talking, and they all wanted to learn. And this was very exciting, new to me. And unfortunately, I did not have it. And I went supposedly to one of the best schools in Iran. I went to art school, which is a state school. It's a big school, and it includes all the art majors, from theater to cinema to handicraft major, which I was in that. Graphic, printmaking, painting, sculpture, a lot of majors, right? And this is sad because we needed to have that facility in that time as well. But I would like to give a shout out to one of my amazing teachers back in Iran. His name is Abdul Nasser Giv Qassab. And he was a teacher. We had him because we were in metal and jewelry specifically. Because handicraft major was a general major, and it had different parts to it, like ceramic, woodworking, glazing, metal and jewelry, right? And I chose metal and jewelry, and this teacher of mine, he was in that field, and he himself is an amazing artist. And he, for the first time throughout that 4 years, taught us what does it mean to talk about an artwork. Just, he took us out of that bubble and showed us that what a complicated, amazing world art is. And that was first, it might sound kind of funny, but that was true. Like, he kind of showed us the process of getting involved in that creative making. And I think it was because of him that I started working. I made my portfolio. I got so much involved in making, and I started enjoying it. And eventually I applied and I got accepted here.
Yeah, so he helped you lay the road.
Yes, he definitely did. He definitely, and there are some amazing teachers, but they're like gems.
Yes, I think everywhere, you know, there's a bell curve. It sounds like you had a gem.
True, but considering the facilities, like in a country that the facility is very understaffed, having these gems, it means a lot.
Yes, and you took advantage of it.
Yes.
And built on it from there. Can you share a little bit about your art? I got to see some of your portfolio on your website, which I will link to on this show's website, but what forms of expression are you most drawn to? You've talked about metal and jewelry, but I also saw a lot of mixed media.
Yeah. I think it's hard to say what specifically I like. I started with metal and jewelry, and even when I was working metal and jewelry, it was not that much of a functional aspect of metal jewelry that was appealing to me. I started working bigger and bigger to a point that it became sculpture. And I think for my art practice, it's not specifically the medium, it's basically the expression or emotion or the concept that makes me choose one of these mediums. That's why I go back and forth between them, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still new.
That's the process, right? I hope for your whole career you're figuring it out.
That's true. And I enjoy working with all these mediums and learning about them, and they're all new to me and they're full of surprises.
I saw one of your rings has a pot on it, like one you would cook chicken soup in.
Yes.
I thought that was so beautiful.
That was one of the pieces I actually made while I was working with that teacher. And I started thinking about the objects that I see around my house or growing up at my aunt's or my grandma's house. And I started like creating those little objects on top of the ring. So I made the bolster. I made a pot. I made a teapot. And yeah, I was making like this collection of objects, daily objects that I grew up with.
That's brilliant.
Thank you.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Golale Yazdani. She is passionate about social justice for women and uses her art as a method of survival and a statement about oppression. So you come from a conservative country with a dictatorial climate. What can you help us understand about the lives of women and how they lead their lives there?
Yeah. Again, as I mentioned, I'm sure some of you might have heard some of those rules and injustices that are happening in the country. And yes, all those rules against women exist. Again, such as women, they cannot study or travel without the permission of their father or their husband or their brother.
Or do you have to have an escort too?
No, not the escort. Okay. No, but if, for example, a woman is studying in a college, in a university, and all of a sudden the husband comes along and says, I don't want my wife to study here. Basically, the school cannot enroll that woman anymore. That's the rule. They can't. Or the very most basic example would be they're not allowed to wear what they want. And it's very, I'm scratching the surface here, of course, but these are just very simple rules. There's very simple rights that everyone needs to have around the world.
And when we spoke before, you said if women wear what they want, they'll be harassed by people on the sidewalk. And if you went to go for help from a policeman, they would not side with you.
Yes, that's true. Again, I just like to put this out there that all these injustices, they exist, and all these rules, they exist, but it does not stop women from going out to pursue their goals. They go study, they get their terminal degree. They're these strong women that they work and they want to make a better condition, situation for themselves, eventually for their children, and they stand up for themselves no matter like how difficult it can be, because you have to repeat it every day, right? And they're courageous and they give me a lot of strength just hearing it, because it's been 3.5 years that I moved to the United States, but I still like talk to my friends, family members, peers, and I still like following the news on online platforms still gives me strength and reminds me of where I'm coming from, right? Yes, there are harasses on the street, and just because they can. And just because there is no law or rule telling not to do that, or there is no repercussion for them, right? I cannot count how many times, and in different ages, like from the time I was a teenage kid all the way up to adulthood, I was on a street and verbally got abused or physically. And you just have to be strong. You just have to not let them keep going with that harassment and still keep going with your life and try to stand up for yourself.
Huge, courage.
Yes.
And vision of a better way to do it.
Yes.
More justice.
Yes. But you never sit back and be like, oh, because of this, I'm not going to do this. No. They exist, and no one on earth should go through this, all these harassments, just because someone can. And what I'm talking about, I just don't want to generalize, say, all the men. It's not like, not at all. Some people that they think, oh, they can't do it, so I'll do it. And it doesn't matter what age demographic they're coming from or what background, either they're single or married, you know, some people do it. And just, but it never stops women and girls to do what they're doing, right?
They just rise up.
Yes. And they also, there are pushbacks too. They stand up for these harassment. They defend themselves. They're not waiting for some or something else to help them. They do it on their own.
That's so cool.
They're very strong.
And you're very strong. You chose to step away from the careful and confident mathematics into the world of art, which, you know, people worry about their artists. Your art speaks to the oppression of women, mm-hmm. and you use it like a weapon. Mm-hmm. What are your hopes for using art to change minds?
Change minds. Well, there is something. My art sometimes does talk about suppression, especially the personal suppression that I myself experienced. That can be from a personal level to social level. But that's not all of my projects. Some of my projects talks about the subject of home, like, and the sense of belonging and longing to where home is. I don't necessarily answer it in my work, but I just propose the question. So I do have maybe one or two different subjects that I pursue in my artwork. Regarding projects, sometimes when I talk about suppression, it just for me is to give an awareness, because I feel like that might be the first step. But it doesn't mean that I all the time try to direct my work toward that way. I never force it. And if it appears in my work, that's amazing. And if it doesn't, it's okay.
It's a piece of what you do.
Yes.
Do you collaborate with your peers back in Iran?
There is a collaboration happening right now. Before this, unfortunately, it hasn't happened. But at this stage, I am working with a couple of young emerging artists back home. And since it's the beginning of the process, that's all I can say. But I would definitely put updates on my website. And, we'll let the public know, because it might happen actually in Portland, Maine.
Oh, okay. So you have some emerging art coming.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes.
There are existing social justice movements mm-hmm. that you've been inspired by, like mm-hmm. My Phone Is My Weapon mm-hmm. and Theater of the Oppressed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you see a way to participate in projects like that mm-hmm. yourself from here?
So Theater of Oppressed, yes, it's by Augusto Boal, and who is a Brazilian theater practitioner, and the whole concept came up around 1970s, and it's basically for social political changes. And I studied that for myself for the last performance that I was working on. And this other social movement that you mentioned, that My Phone Is My Weapon, again, as I mentioned, some of these social movements, I am keep tracking up all the news and everything, but they do not necessarily are in my work. If it comes up, that's amazing. But maybe down the road, there might be a project that directly involves these social movements, contemporary movements, but not at this point.
Yes. I think of it kind of like music. You know, if you grew up listening to certain music, it just kind of seeps into your own sound. Mm-hmm. And you might be doing something totally different, but just hear that faint
yes.
sound. And I think in your art,
yes.
too, maybe it just brings the question right through.
Exactly.
I mean, the chicken pot.
Exactly. It's an extension of myself. So, and I am affected by things that I see and hear around me in the environment. So it might come up sometimes in a very direct way, and sometimes in different ways. And sometimes it's just like inspiration that it's not necessarily showing itself within the artwork.
That's why we have to stay tuned into your art. I wondered if you could tell us about your biggest goal, how you could best support others in expressing themselves without censorship.
Like artist, so the project I'm working on with some of the emerging artists is actually about having their work to be shown here in order for them to have this direct conversation with a wide range of audience without any censorship and without waiting for someone to support them. So having a platform, right?
Are you taking what you learned from your favorite teacher and making it happen for your peers back home?
They're making it happen for them for themselves. I'm just here, and I might know some venues, or I might know some opportunities that
you're
facilitating. Yes, yeah, just as a facilitator. So that is one thing, and since it's like it might happen within a next year or two, so I would like to share that with the listeners, and it will. It will probably happen in Portland, Maine. I'm still working on talking to different venues, but that might be the place for happening to have these emerging artists come and show their work here.
That would be cool.
And because one thing that I want to mention is that when you're an artist in Iran, you are supporting yourself. You're supporting your art practice. There's no one, not an independent. Like, there might be some galleries that they want to support you, but specifically after the sanctions, they also have a hard time supporting their artists, specifically internationally. I was reading this article. It's tried to keep up with the news and everything around our community in Iran. And some of the gallery owners, the well-known one, they were talking that how after the before sanctions, they were able to participate maybe in 5 or 6 international art fairs, right, and show artists, which is amazing. It's not great, but it's good. But right after sanction, this kind of came down to 1 or 2, barely. So this is a lot of limitation, and there's a lot of a little resource for the artists inside. And I know that there are some materials and mediums that artists can no more find after the sanctions, or some digital equipment that they cannot access because of the sanctions. So again, this does not stop them. They will find different ways for this creative energy to make their work maybe more simple material, but no artist and no art community needs to experience this if they wanted to flourish.
And you have such an open heart where you want to share what you've gotten with others. I love that.
I try.
Kolale, you are utterly delightful. Not only are you bright and gracious and insightful, but you're also a fierce advocate for women and freedom.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see what you'll create to change the culture toward more justice. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you for having me.